You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And joining me now is Carter Rodriguez, one of the co-hosts on the Excellent Chase Down podcast and one of the editors and writers at Fear the Sword. Carter, what's going on, buddy?
Your intro suggests that I'm like following something up.
Well, you know, here's the thing.
And I'm not, I don't want to peel back the curtain too much here, Chris, but I kind of thought I'd lead the show, you know?
Carter, you lead the show. You lead my heart. You lead our G-Chat. Like, you lead everything. you're my Bobcat buddy in the Fear the Sword group. We have a bunch of other, like, crappy Max Goals and Justin, like, tweeting about the CFL.
To any of our listeners, this is what it's like to be patronized.
Look, how do you feel about Jeff Bowles is, like, really my question here. Like, that's my bit. That's why you're actually here. I just wanted to talk about Jeff Bowles.
So for everyone who doesn't know, because no one knows,
look, they all should know.
you didn't bother to give the Ohio Bobcats let your boy Saul Phillips go, head coach. His era was a total disaster. We hired a local boy, former Bobcat Jeff Bowles, to be the coach after a moderately successful stint at Stony Brook, I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that in on it. I don't know.
They have like no players.
No, they have no players, and their best ones are leaving.
Yeah, Jason Carter is like playing for Xavier, and it's just like very sad. I'm very sad about that because Jason Carter's like good. I like that guy. But anyway,
yeah. Alas, go Bobcats.
Yeah, go Bobcats. Let's let DJ Cooper coach in like 2 years. Let's just see what happens. I don't really know. I feel bad.
Yeah. Has it occurred to you that we might never see another NCAA tournament win for our alma mater until we die?
Well, like, I don't know, what the world could end very soon, so like that's not like the most surprising thing.
Like, I'm just saying, it's actually probably more likely than not that we never see another NCAA tournament win.
I never thought I missed Jim Christian, but I kind of do.
Oh, that guy. Always very good to me, very mean to his players.
Well, dude, he freaking hired Stevie Taylor, which is just like an incredible come up.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Stevie Taylor's an assistant coach, and he's always Instagram storing like him getting off the plane. Man, and I'm just like,
that
Stevie,
dude was a high key clown.
Between
in
that
the most
and, like,
lovable way.
Yeah, him, yeah. Between him and like Treg Seti like getting mad at the liberal media on Instagram, like it's just like an incredible time to follow the Ohio Bobcats.
Treg wasn't a part of my life, really. Yeah. Listeners, is this doing it for you?
I hope it is, because the Ohio Bobcats are incredible. And we're not going to talk about Marquise Chris anymore, so that's good. But so Carter and I are continuing my breakdown series of all the guys that were actually on the Cavs this year. They didn't really do the Cavs did very little exit interviewing for the players, like none really, but we're going to do our own version of that. So Carter, let's start with David Nwaba. For me, David Nwaba is one of the big pleasant surprises of the season. It was jarring the first couple games when he played after he wasn't in the rotation to start the year, to watch how he rotated on defense, to watch like an actual Cavalier know how to play defense. Very strong, ended up being like one of the guys with the better net ratings on the team. The shot isn't there. He missed a bunch of games with ankle injuries, and that kind of derailed his funk a little bit. He's going into a weird summer where he is going to be a restricted free agent despite being 26 years old, assuming the Cavs tender him. Are you like, were you in on the David Nwaba experience, or am I just a weirdo? I am a weirdo, but how much of a weirdo am I?
Not at all, dude. I think everyone loved this guy. I think you get the impression that he just works really, really hard. You know, there are guys that have like the reputation of like, you know, these defensive bulldogs that can't really shoot, but very rarely do they actually have above average feel in other parts of the game. David Nwaba is literally like, you know, we always say like this guy's a jump shot away from being like a really, really good player. Like, that actually is David Nwaba.
He'd be making, because if he could shoot threes like 37%, he'd be making like $10 million a year.
Yeah, 35%, he'd be at $10 million. We let James Ennis become a a role player people care about. So why couldn't that be David Nwaba? I mean, this guy is a absolute bulldog, regularly guards up. And there was a stretch where against the Kings near the end of the year where he was getting Marvin Bagley posted on him, and Bagley just could not move the guy. And like you could tell he like just didn't know what to make of it. Like he's like, this guy's just like locking me down. What the hell? I'm like having to take these awkward, like weird push hooks from like 12 feet away because I couldn't get to any of my spots. But then even offensively, I think there was a lot of, I think that's actually where I was most surprised with Nwaba. No, he can't shoot at all. Not really. But he did, he was a little better than you'd think he was, you know, even if he had some really ugly misses, like he did make a decent amount of threes. And then to me, I was really impressed by his craft when attacking the basket.
That to me was the most jarring thing about him, because I did not expect him to like maybe like once a game or once every other game, just like get a rebound, book it down the floor and like lay the ball in. I just didn't think that was like in his skill set. It doesn't like look like it should be in his skill set. And the weird thing with his 3-point shooting for me is like, You look at the breakdown for this year versus last year when he was with the Bulls in 17-18. He's never been a good corner 3-point shooter, which you would think he would be. With the Cavs, he shot 34% on corner threes. With the Bulls, he's at 29%, and then on non-corner threes, 32%. You would think like he could bag more corner threes, and I don't know like if what it is, if it's just like he just is. I wonder if it's like a strength thing where he's just like stronger than like he's just like definitely stronger than the average wing. So I wonder if like the flexibility and dexterity in his arms is just like keeps him from having a normal shot. Like I don't know, but he's because he's built like he should be playing like fullback or something, or like playing linebacker.
Yeah, he really like, is. I'll bet
he's super strong.
Yeah, I'll bet that guy was a terrifying linebacker in high school football. I'm not sure, but like I will say, like he's got that really long wingspan, and it does. You kind of find guys with those crazy wingspans tend to be really interesting finishers, and I do think if his body type and dimensions make his jump shot a little bit of a process, it does allow him to have that extra craft and to go up with those extra interesting angles. And really, mostly what I like about him offensively, and I don't know if you agree with this, he doesn't play like someone who isn't a good shooter. From the perspective of oftentimes when you have guys who have a glaring hole in their offensive skill set, it results in this very like it's worse than just passiveness. It's timidness. It's like this, oh, shit, I got the ball. And like, I never really got that vibe with Nwaba. You know, I always felt like this guy's very confident in what his game is and what he's comfortable with. And even like when he is pushing his comfort zone, like you never really feel that he's like, you know, not on a solid footing. And like that's kind of the biggest difference that you see in him than in some of these other offensive players.
No, I think that's right, because like he didn't ever do anything that you didn't feel like he at least thought he could do, right? Like he didn't like do something like reckless or crazy. He's got like that weird ability to get to the line. Like looking at his foul drawing, he doesn't make free throws at like a clip that like you feel good about, and that's like kind of an indicator that he's just never gonna figure out the shot. Like he's at 66.7% for the year on free throw percentage, but in terms of getting to the line, he was fouled in the 87th percentile of like players. Wow. On shots with the Bulls the year before, in his first like actual real NBA season where he played 70 games, he was in the 100th percentile. Like he was the elite of the elite at drawing fouls.
Well, that's kind of how you justify not being much of a shooter, is that you can find efficiency elsewhere. Like, especially as a low usage guy, I think the, you know, a thing with him is he's never rushing. He's never, when he's attacking the basket, he's never out of control, but he's moving very quickly. So he seeks out contact, but he has enough body control to change angles at the last minute. I think that's like, that's a really big part of why Harden is such a good foul drawer, right? Is, you know, he gets the defender going one way and gets their arms moving in a certain direction, and then at the last second explodes into the other direction, into their body, where they're now off balance. And I do think that there's a very similar That's kind of the consistent thing in who draws fouls at a very high level. You know, it's not like a Kyrie or a Steph who tend to like to finish around guys. Nwaba is is someone who uses his athleticism and body control to finish through guys. And, you know, now I think it's fair to say that it's not as impactful for a guy like him because he isn't a high usage player and isn't someone you want to throw a lot of possessions to, but it does help justify his existence, especially on a team like the Cavs.
So speaking of Harden, I went back and was like watching some of him defending like some of the league's like elite wings, so like LeBron and Harden and Giannis and stuff. I was really like blown away by how well he defended Harden. Like if you go back to the November game in particular, he was just like, I can't say like I watched like every James Harden game, you know, or like have like a read on how every team defended him. Like I can't tell you that, but just I can't imagine that there were like more than 7-8 guys that did a better job than Nwaba on him. And like he's like Harden's like 4-15, I think, and according to the NBA's matchup stats in that game when Nwaba was defending him, he was just very patient, very skilled. Like I think he's like a useful NBA player. I can't figure out why. When he ended up in unrestricted free agency, why like a team like the Lakers or like the Rockets or like someone didn't sign him other than the 3-point shot? Like I can't quite wrap my mind around that one. That you know, this is certainly could be me overvaluing what he is, having seen him up close for a year. But like I feel like he's a useful NBA player. When you look at the Cavs and him this summer, Joe Varden, you know, reported that, like he said, Nwaba said he wants to be back. The Cavs will have the ability, if they choose to tender him, bring him, kind of have a lot of leverage over him in free agency. I feel like it's kind of a no-brainer to bring him back and maybe, like, on something like a 3-year deal and not just, like, oh, another 1-year deal.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things where I just think the league got a little too smart for its own good on obsessing about shooting. 100%. Just, and it's also fair to say that Nwaba is a guy who kind of plays in relative obscurity. I don't think that's an outrageous you know, claim to say that, you know, he's someone who might fly under the radar, but you know, playing in Chicago and now playing in Cleveland. But it does seem like he's a guy who should be able to help a contender. And maybe we are a little clouded because, you know, a guy like that skill set, like I always talk about how, you know, like, for example, there were stretches where the Cavs playing Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance together looked pretty good for this Cavs team. There were, you know, certain minute combinations where it's like, oh, you know, this isn't actually as bad as it looks. And it's like you kind of have to remind yourself that, like, the team stinks. So, like, what is best for this team is probably not best for a good team. And like maybe that's the case with Nwaba a little bit, where it's like he just looks so competent on this on that tire fire of a roster that, you know, when you actually see him being abandoned in the playoffs in the corner and Harden kicks it to him and he clanks it off the side of the backboard, like maybe we're just wrong. But I don't think we are. I do think this is a guy who makes winning plays. That's kind of why I like him. He's not just he's not a reputation guy. He actually does make winning plays really regularly. And like you really feel his presence out there in a way you don't feel many non-shooters' presence, in a good way at least. So if I'm the Cavs, I mean, I'm trying to lock him up for 3 years on an affordable deal. You know, I'm not paying a premium. I'm going to try. I'm basically doing the, you know, I think when you're negotiating with a guy like Nwaba who doesn't have that much job security historically, you kind of do have the benefit of saying, hey, we're not going to give you that much annually, but we are going to lock you up for 3 years.
And then for him, it's like he's going to be 27, like about 26, 27 years old. He's kind of in the weirdly like going into the prime of his athletic prime. I wonder what his approach is going to be to this. You know, like I can't imagine he's like going to be super enthused to like do another like prove it year contract. Like if I was him, I'd be wanting to make actual money.
Like, oh yeah.
He's got to look for that in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think if any team comes calling with a real offer that isn't the Cavs, you know, I think he'll probably look long and hard at that. But if it's another dry market for some reason, which, you know, again, I don't see why things would have changed that much from last year this year. I think the Cavs might be able to get some value in and have a guy that can be a real culture setter for their locker room while still helping the team all the way. All right, so
yeah,
I think they should chase a good value contract. I mean, what's the most you'd pay him for a 3-year deal?
24.
Oh, you pay him that much?
I'm saying like the absolute like maximum. If I like,
oh, had I would.
I think five into six is like probably like the safe zone. 5 or 6 per year.
I would say about. I would be thrilled at if they could get him 3 years, you know, $13 million. But it does feel like 15 to 17 might be the way to go. But you know, I also would understand why you might not want to lock yourself into a guy like that at this stage in the rebuild. But I personally would have no reservations at probably no more than $17 million. That's kind of where I'm starting to get uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think the summer is just – I have no idea what to expect from the summer in terms of the whole NBA.
None, dude.
It's going to be so weird. Don't know how teams are going to approach this. Don't know, like, if some team's going to come through with, like, a poison pill kind of contract where, like, he could, like, opt out after – I don't know. Like, there's just something, like, screwy could happen. If a smart team comes calling and, like – gets him in like with like a 1-year opt out or something like that, or just something like that's very player friendly, that wouldn't shock me either. Just if it all it takes is one smart team and like maybe the right team kind of comes calling, but who knows. Let's go from Nwaba, who played a lot and was impactful, to a guy who played a whopping 0 games for the Cavaliers. John Henson is on an expiring contract, one of 5 Cavs on an expiring contract heading into next season. He's one of the many, many front court players they have with Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, Ante Zizic, and Larry Nance Jr. all under contract. What do you make of the idea that John Henson like could be on the roster next year, having, and especially because we technically don't even know what jersey number he has with the Cavs. And if someone like has a John Henson jersey, like please tweet me because I need to see that it actually exists.
And please tweet any doctors. Because you might need to get checked out. I'm kind of bummed we didn't get to see him.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, seems like a nice guy. I like to. It's kind of one of our running bits on my podcast with Justin Rowan that like when they traded for him, Justin kind of had this idea that he was having like a career year because Twitter was like kind of freaking out that he was hitting threes, but he was averaging like 5 and 4. I actually do think the idea of John Henson is a very, very good player. I do wonder if he ever plays a minute for the Cavs.
I just feel like there's like a very good chance he never does, because I feel like there's just no way we get through the summer and like there isn't like a significant trade in the front court, or like at least like a notable trade in the front court where like money gets moved around. Because I just like, even if the Cavs next year, if their goal is, hey, we want to be better and more competent, but we don't want to lose that top 10 protected pick. Like if that's like their sort of like through line for next year as we keep moving forward with Tristan and Henson and, you know, Nance and Zizic and Love all under contract, that's like too many bodies to have minutes. And like I can't imagine, like, even if you want to keep your top 10 protected pick, I can't imagine like paying even just Henson and Tristan a combined $28 million, and then Love's making like almost $30 million, and you know, Nance's extension starts next year. Like that's a lot of money for like for dudes that all play like the same two positions. And maybe should all be playing like the same one position, frankly, in the modern NBA.
Yeah, this is another discussion I had with Justin on the Chase Down, which is, you know, the Cavs have so many pieces that are movable, and that, like, you know, I joke that like if you started a 2K franchise with the Cavs, your instinct is to make 9 trades on day one. Like Dele expiring contract, get him out of here. Henson expiring, get him out of here. Clarkson expiring, get him out of here. You know, like you just want to like, you just like, but the Cavs aren't going to be able to make that decision with everyone. Like they're going to have some degree of roster continuity because teams don't make 8 trades in one day. You know, like that for the most part, like most of these guys are going to be here. Only a few are going to get shipped out, you know, guys like JR, and maybe one of Dele or Brandon Knight. You know, there are guys that are going to be moved. It just feels like Henson has to be one of them because, for one thing, that he's on an expiring with a decent cap number where this summer you might be able to help a team out by taking on some bad long-term money in exchange for his expiring salary and get a sweetener. But more importantly, he's kind of in that Alec Burks mold where it's like teams might be able to talk themselves into him a little bit too. You know, he's a very easy player to talk yourselves into. Like, hey, you know, like, yeah, we're mostly getting off bad money, but he could be our eighth, ninth man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, here's an Alec Burks trivia question for you. Do you know how many games he played with the Kings?
It didn't feel like he was in their rotation.
Played 13 games. Averaged a whopping 1.7 points per game with the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. But, I mean, and maybe the Kings didn't view him that way, but...
Yeah, who knows?
But, like, I will say, like, it felt like the guy, you know, him or Rodney Hood or any of these guys, where it's like, okay, yeah, you're getting... George Hill is actually a great example, right? Like, the Bucks did not trade for George Hill because they thought he was a good player. They traded for him to maneuver their way into cap flexibility to re-sign Chris Middleton next year, but... Hey, it doesn't hurt that George Hill can help them. Like, I think that might be a thing that a team talks themselves into with Henson, and in a way that maybe they probably won't for a Brandon Knight or a Dele.
I wonder if, when you look at just the numbers with Henson and with Knight, it's really Henson and Dele. So Henson's at 10.4. Dele's at 9.6. I wonder if because those numbers are lower and it's just like easier to match those numbers in theory, if they're going to end up being more movable than Knight and Thompson.
Yeah.
The Tristan contract, I've been like trying to find like a situation that makes sense. That, like Miami is really the team for all of these. And I'm just like, let's get like a Hassan Whiteside like salary dump going and give me picks. Like that's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see any reason why the Cavs would be trading Tristan. Like, I know that, like, me and Justin and maybe you to a way lesser extent are, like, a little perhaps too enamored with Thompson. But, like, he really was a veteran leader for them all year. And he is still a good player. And his reputation around the league isn't that still.
Yeah.
His reputation is as an overpaid, as a byproduct of LeBron flexing too much control over the team while he was here. That's Tristan's reputation. So you're paying a tax on dealing that asset that you probably shouldn't have to pay, but it's there. Like that perception matters. So when you're looking to move guys, it's like, okay, I can move a better player in Tristan Thompson who does make some more money. Is more likely to be treated like a negative asset, or I can move John Henson, who's an expiring on a $10 million deal that is much more likely to be viewed as a neutral asset. Well, yeah, I'll just keep the better player and look to move Henson, who's going to be easier to move anyway.
Yeah. Let's pivot to the last guy we're going to talk about today. Ante Zizic, just where are you at on Ante?
I don't know. I'm going to piss off David, if he ever listened to the podcast.
David, look, here's the thing. I love David. Eeyore.
Big time Eeyore. Well, in this instance, he thinks I'm being the Eeyore, which is, I'm just completely like, I don't know, man. Like, I still feel this way. And I understand this was like a horrible process when the Lakers traded.
Zubac.
I forgot his name. Zubac, sorry. When they traded Zubac to the Clippers, I understand that's a terrible process and really embarrassing because like they just didn't need to trade a decent young player for nothing for Mike Muscala. But I was like sitting here like, guys, I think we've seen enough big, tall 7-footers with touch that can't move that look good on bad teams. Like, ultimately, like, when Zizic looked at his best, it was doing stuff that, like, most tall guys with any touch can do, which is, like, finishing little dump-offs around the basket. Like, that's nice, but, like, good teams don't really let you do that. And he's not that good defensively. I just feel like that's such a replaceable guy. And the Cavs already have so much capital invested at the center position that it's, like, I'm not saying Ante Zizic stinks, but what I am saying is for this Cavs team, he doesn't really matter, and he's not really like worth like thinking about in the 10-year plan, you know, like you're already pretty much set on Larry Nance as your backup center of the future. They made it very clear they were not that interested in starting Nance at center, and they just signed him to a 4-year deal. So what are we doing here?
Yeah, the thing with Ante that I think makes him like probably worth being around for a couple of years, because he's just very cheap and like under team control. Like that's like one of the biggest things in his favor.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get rid of him.
No, I agree, because like his, you look at his offensive game. It's, you know, he has a nice touch. He's got the ability to do, to have some post moves. Like they're not the most modern thing in the world, but like he can do them. The problem is he, you know, like you get out to the elbow and like defense is sagged off him when he was at the elbow, and like that's not a good sign. I don't think he's ever gonna expand that range in a meaningful way. He's not really strong. Like he's not a guy that's gonna bulldoze dudes. Like Enes Kanter like is like a disaster in defense, but teams talk themselves into him because
he makes you feel him.
Yeah, in a way. Ante doesn't do that. He's like not that he's soft, but he's like more like a skill guy and not just like a brute force like ramming into you in the paint. I like wonder if there's like a role for him in like on a good team where it's like a 10-minute to game kind of like depth kind of thing, but it's like that's like, that's not even a problem the Cavs have to think about right now. Like, when you think about the roster construction for next year and going forward, like, I think you're right. Like, he's not in the 10-year plan. He's has some use, but it's a replaceable skill set. I think that he's cheap right now, considering where the Cavs are at financially, is sort of an interesting aspect of this. And he's young, and you can talk yourself into him, and you have two more years where you can really kind of see if you want anything. But, like, if this summer, if he was, like, in a deal where like they were doing some salary dumping and like let's say just taking back like a older like a veteran wing who would kind of feel like a more pressing need and they needed to like match salary and Zizic was like the add-in, I would be like, okay, that's fine depending on what you got back, assuming you like a first round pick or like a more interesting young player back in return.
Yeah, this is gonna sound really mean, but I actually don't want it to be mean. It's just kind of it's kind of like a value neutral statement, but again, it's gonna come off really mean. There is no transaction that I wouldn't make just because of Ante Zizic.
No, 100%.
Like, there's nothing like, oh, well, we could make that trade, but what about Ante? Like, I'm not going to think that way. And really, you just shouldn't think that way about your third string center. And, like, that's ultimately what he is. He's a great stopgap starter on, you know, to get yourself through the season. So, like, I appreciate him for that. He's not just a guy. I think he's a little – he's somewhere between a Jag and, like, you know, a building block, you know. He's in this weird nebulous space that makes him really hard to place. And I think that's why we annoyed David with this, is like, because we were kind of talking to him like he's just a guy. And I think he probably deserves a little bit better than that. But it's a little complicated. I know I'm being a little nebulous here, but I think Zizic just a little nebulous.
Well, and he's like part of the Kyrie trade too. And like, I wonder if there's like some residual thing of that, because like he's one of the guys you got back for the best, like the best non-LeBron draft pick you've ever had, you know, the guy who had the, like, there's something there to the idea that they got him in the trade that got them Sexton and Isaiah and Jay Crowder and everything. And like, he's one of the two pieces they kind of still have left from that. That there's like something I think to that from when you think about him in terms of value as well. The thing with him that like I think for me that the kind of eye-opening moment was, I don't know if like he was hurt or banged up or something, but like there was a game where like Marquese Chris like went in ahead of him and he got a DNP, and I was just like, if this is happening, that to me just like feels sort of telling.
Yep, I think you're probably right there. I don't know, man. It's no one's fault. It's like, I just think sometimes people fall a little too in love with these like end of roster guys. Like if the team's bad and you're the 10th man, that's kind of all you need to know sometimes.
I will say that, like, I think that's right, because I'm guilty of this with like, I look at, I think, you know, I think to some extent, like we could all be guilty of that with Nwaba. I think.
Oh yeah. I mean, we just talked about whether we might just be way off on this because he happens to have good moments on a team that's terrible.
Look, watching him just rotate, I was just like, wow, like this is new.
Oh, you've got a skill.
You know where to be on defense. This is weird. Like for me, like I think the guy that I feel that way in terms of like the fringe guys on the roster is like, I watched Nick Stout like it'd be not really that good, but like I'm just like, well, the Cavs haven't had wings who just like can know what they're sort of able to do. And like aren't going to like do Rodney Hood things. So I just am like, ah, that guy has like value. And like Trevor Magnani got like really mad at me about that. Like I was like, Trevor, you're smarter than all of us and I appreciate you very, very much.
Sometimes you just get lost in the suck.
Yeah, you do get lost in the suck. Carter, wrap it up on this. Was this Cavs season enjoyable for you? Did you have fun with it?
I don't know, man. I don't like talking about this because I look like a jerk. I just feel because everyone's feeling so good about the team, I kind of am feeling okay about the team. But I will say this: this was not a fun season for me. It was ruined from the very onset with the open start and firing Lou, which meant that the whole season was kind of a wash. And then Love didn't play the whole time, so that he's the only thing that makes them watchable on offense. They're the worst defense in NBA history. Sexton was historically bad the first half of the year. There was a lot of times where I was just like, why am I even watching? Like, I was just like bored, and like, and that was the thing. Like, even last year, you know, Justin was a big proponent of like kind of like being ready to be done with the LeBron era, just because like all the drama is exhausting and they don't try hard. So like if they can't win the title, who gives a shit? But like, I'd rather be watch and be annoyed than be disinterested.
No, I agree.
And I was mostly disinterested. I was like, I just can't talk myself into Jaren Blossom game. And like there were times on the pod where we had to talk about that, and I was like, ugh. I guess we'll pretend this is important.
The Cavs started 32 starting lineups this year. They had 27 different players on contract. They had 4 different players wear the number 3. This was a waste of a season, you know, in a lot of ways, frankly.
Yep. So I don't know, man. It was more fun than it had any right to be, I guess, would be the way I would frame it, because there were, you know, some stretches of genuine enjoyment. But that enjoyment was pretty few and far in between for me. But I don't know, maybe we're off on this because everyone else seemed to say it was better than, and maybe it's because we covered it closely the whole time, but even Justin and David seemed to be okay with it. I don't know, maybe we're just being Scrooges.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably a Scrooge. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
I just hate wasting my time.
Yeah, I just like
that was my thing. I think we specifically were like, you know, we don't have that much time in our lives, and to watch this stupid team for like on some of those nights like just really rub both of us the wrong way. But yeah, you know, again, I'm higher on their future than you are. Though I guess we'll see what
I need to see what the draft and the coaching search happens. That will set the tone for me more than anything. Like, I just need to see, like, we're recording this and you're listening to this after the Kobe Altman press conference on Friday. I am like fascinated by what he's gonna say there. I just think, like, I think he talking there until he when he talks and then to when they hire a coach, those are going to be like the tone setting things for this offseason. And I just like need to see how these things play out before I can like really like get a good gauge. Like there are definitely fun things about the season. Kevin Love just seeming like he's like a happy dude is like really pleasant to me. Him wearing overalls was like a very like kind of like a very funny thing to me, to watch him walk out of the arena with Kate Bach wearing overalls the other night. I was like, good for you, Kevin. Channing Frye, the whole thing there was good. Colin Sexton's development was good. Jetty, like him being mostly, I think, kind of interesting is a good sign.
I'm a little worried about Jetty.
His restricted free agency next year is going to be quite the experience, because coming up in a hurry. No one's
interested. Yeah. Dude, I just did a expansion thing on 2K because I just decided I thought an expansion franchise might be fun. And Jetty was in that. They didn't project Jetty. It's just like, I know they would in real life, but it was just funny that they didn't in the game.
Yeah, no, that checks out a little bit. But it's going to be interesting. I just need to see how this first part of the summer gets going, and then I think I can kind of feel and prognosticate one way or the other. But it's going to be fun. Carter will be writing about it, talking about it on the Chase Down, writing about it for the Sword, to be able to find his work there. Find his tweets at Carter_Shade. Carter, thanks so much, man.
Love you, buddy.